I do honestly believe in all relationships, we come together at a certain point in our lives because we need something from that other person. We need something that we can't give ourselves, that we're completely unaware of. It's only when you realize you can give it to yourself, you then start to look at the foundation of that relationship.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. As always, I'm super excited. Today, we have Sharon from the UK. How are you, Sharon?
I'm good, thank you, Brad. Thank you for having me.
So we're going to talk about something today that affects most of us. There's very few people that escapes this. And we're going to talk about how our childhood programming affects our intimate relationships as an adult. And there's so many people who are in bad relationships and have no idea that the cause really has to do with things that happened decades ago. So yeah, we're going to have an awesome conversation with Sharon, who specializes in this, and let's jump right in. So Sharon, can you give us a version or tell us what was your childhood programming like? What was it like as a child for you?
It's funny, actually, what you said there of like having no idea, because I didn't have any idea until I was an adult. And my childhood programming was very much, I guess I felt there was some love there, but maybe that they might not be available to me all the time. So I treated love very cautiously. You know, I could feel it at times from certain people, but not from everybody. So it made me think at times that maybe it's not completely available to me and I have to just earn it. That was definitely my earlier senses of knowing that and knowing that now as an adult.
And you went through a real stressful time as a child when your folks got divorced, right?
Yeah, because I was really young at the time, you know, I was about 5 years old, and I actually carried so much anger to my parents because we went to court, and I remember being such a tiny child being asked, you know, who do you want to live with, your mum or your dad? And I'm thinking, well, both of them. And at that point, I remember choosing based on somebody else's needs, what was better for them. Ooh. And as an adult, I realize I've done that in most of my relationships. I've made decisions based on what's best for another person.
Oh my gosh, how can a court system and how can a group of adults think that it's a good thing to bring a five-year-old into court and ask what parent they should be with?
I know. Yeah. But for me, that was normal. It's when I became an adult and I had my own child, I'm like, that's not normal.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I know someone who deals with severe anxiety as an adult, and he shared a very similar story that he had to pick. And when he picked, the parent who he didn't pick basically was like, cut him off. So you're forced to make a decision as a kid. You make a decision and then you are like ostracized from it. Just incredible. Incredible. So yeah. How do you think that this emotional baggage from childhood uniquely shapes an individual's approach to personal and professional relationships in adulthood?
I think that you either go one of two ways. You either go with what is safe, the emotions that are safe, that you like to feel, or the ones that are familiar. And sometimes your familiar ones can feel safe, but they're not necessarily the right ones. Again, it's down to that people pleasing or choosing what is right for other people because that feels safe. You know, if you're picking up your environment and your perception of your environment, if you want it to be calm, you're going to make decisions based on that. And actually, like you just said about choosing a parent, for my whole life, I've always wondered why I'm so indecisive. And I now know.
Wow. Tell us why.
Because of maybe getting the decision wrong, being that small child in court, making a decision. It was kind of like, you know, do you want a broken arm or a broken leg?
Yeah.
Neither.
Yeah. So once you chose the parent, how did the other parent relate?
I think this really had a negative impact on their mental health. And this is where the abandonment came in because that person couldn't deal with the other parent getting custody and left. So I've always had some resentment there of you've abandoned me. But actually, it's only as an adult and talking this through and vocalizing, because if I'm completely honest, I only did that last year. If tell that parent that, did you know I made this decision because of this? And that parent didn't know that until I said. So it brought a lot of healing, but in that process, it took probably 35 years of resentment.
Wow. Wow. So, okay. So you said, when I asked you the question of how does it affect adult relationships, I think one of the things you said is you often will make a decision based on the other person's preference. Someone may be listening and be like, so what? What's wrong with that? What is wrong with that?
Yeah, well, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that, because I was always, looking back now, I was oblivious, but in my head, it was a happy life. It was fine. It was okay. I genuinely didn't think I had any trauma from childhood until recently. And it's only now, when you look back, you go, oh, I've blocked all that. I've suppressed it. This did affect me. I was just going along with the treadmill of life. I wasn't actually making decisions that I wanted to do because I didn't know myself.
So living your life for someone else's benefit is what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And although it wasn't unhappy, it was still fun and joyous. You come to realize when you get to, I'm 44, I think, what have I done? What have I made consciously? What decision have I made consciously? Because, and I mean a proper decision from my heart and soul, rather than, yeah, let's do that. It sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said you didn't know you had a traumatic childhood. And I think that, look, my father hit me with a belt and made fun of me. But would 5 years ago, would I have said I had a traumatic childhood? I would have said no. My dad was just kind of a dick, right? Do you know that of the 100 clients I've served, I would bet you that 5 of them told me they had a really bad traumatic childhood?
Yeah.
Maybe 6, maybe 7. Because we as adults, your brain, either you forget your childhood for one of two reasons. Either it was completely uneventful or it was so painful, you block it out.
Yeah.
So I think most of us are walking around thinking, why do I feel depressed? Why do I feel anxious? Why does my marriage suck so bad? Well, I hear all this childhood stuff, but that's not me. Like, it probably is you. And if you want to find out, there's a foolproof way to find out. Go and spend 3 minutes taking my self-love quiz at bradchandler.com/quiz. And it's going to tell you, if you lack self-love, if you have mild self-love, you were not born with those things. They were formed. They were learned behaviors. And they were in response to most likely something that happened as a child.
How, I agree with that.
Sharon, how could you fix something that you weren't aware of?
Well, my personal experience was I had rapid transformational therapy because I wanted to be a rapid transformational therapy practitioner. And this is a true story. I genuinely remember at that first part when you have to present a problem going, well, I don't really have anything. That's how oblivious I was. I was like, well, I don't really have anything. And the first person that used this therapy on me, they were like, and what's your childhood? And I literally skimmed over it. Like you just said, you ask all them people and they're like, it was fine. It was fine. And I skimmed over it. And then it hit me. The more I looked at it, the more I was like, oh, I normalized that. I absolutely normalized it. And it wasn't normal.
Yeah, but it was normal to you for all those years. There's a book on my shelf, The Myth of Normal, and that's the whole thing. We normalize. We've basically normalized that 33% of Americans are on an antidepressant or anti-anxiety drug. That's not normal.
I know.
Those people don't need to be on those drugs.
Yeah.
What they need to do is become aware of their childhood and how their programming is affecting them today.
Yeah, absolutely.
She mentioned RTT, Rapid Transformational Therapy. It's actually where we met.
Yeah.
I use that as part of my practice too. If you want to find more about RTT, just go to bradchandler.com/RTT. So all change begins with awareness, right?
Yeah.
This is the thing that I'm trying to shout from the mountaintops, because I lived this for 47 years. I'm in the same boat you are, Sharon. I'm like, look, I smoke some weed. I drink. I had two marriages that didn't work out, but it's their fault. There's nothing wrong with me. My kids have behavioral problems. Well, a lot of kids have behavioral problems. What did I do wrong? I'm a great dad. I lost millions of dollars in business. All right, maybe I'm just not that smart. And it wasn't until I got the awareness that, oh my gosh, my childhood programming led me to believe that I'm not enough. And that's driving everything in my life.
Yeah. And I think that was the realization I had of that. If you want anything to change and you want to interrupt anything, you have to go in at subconscious level, because my consciousness of it was that ignorant and oblivious. It was completely unaware of what was running in the background every single day until I had the awareness of it. And then I pulled it into my forefront of my consciousness and I could deal with it. It's only then going back and interrupting it at that subconscious level. Because if you don't do that, it's continually going to play. It's like a download, isn't it? It's like a direct download in your subconscious mind. that continues to play until you interrupt it.
Yeah. What controls your behavior?
Subconscious.
Your subconscious thoughts. When were your subconscious thoughts most likely formed?
Your feelings, your emotions, everything you respond to, your reactions.
When were they likely formed?
Oh gosh, between birth and probably 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You spend most of that time in an alpha wave brain state. That means you're like, you're walking around being hypnotized by society, by everyone around you.
Yeah. It's a direct, it kind of bypasses the subconscious mind. It's a direct download. It misses that first part. It goes straight into the subconscious.
Yeah. I mean, look, we could talk about this. I love this stuff because it just fascinates me to no end that we have so much suffering in this world, Sharon. On every level, from child abuse to child sex trafficking to the wars to terrorism to drug use to divorce, obesity. What's the one common factor of all those things I just mentioned?
Our programming.
Our programming. Our subconscious behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our subconscious behavior is telling us that we're not good or we're not smart enough or fast enough or not lovable enough. So therefore, we're hurt. And what do hurt people do?
Hurt people.
They hurt people. Do you think that there's a terrorist that has ever walked the planet that had their needs met as a child?
No.
No. Do you think there's a prisoner in a prison today that had their needs met as a child?
No, absolutely not.
There's no way. What do? We put them in solitary confinement. We take these kids who are in juvenile detention. They're in juvenile detention because they lack a connection, because their subconscious mind is just trying to protect them from the pain that they live with as a child.
Yeah. And I think if there was so much more understanding of that, it would be easier to, one, rehabilitate people, and they would be less of that behavior as a society.
Yes.
People would be more connected to themselves. People would understand themselves better and actually take some accountability and responsibility.
Yes. We don't need to punish people, just like you don't need to punish kids because it doesn't work.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we close down jails, but what I'm saying is instead of punishing people, teach them what we're talking about today. Sorry, I get so passionate about this that I want to literally help change the world, and we can one person at a time. So Sharon, back to you and your relationships. So rough childhood, you thought your childhood was fine. You found out that at 5 years old, when you got to go in front of a judge and pick a parent, like that's really, really, really hard on you, really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
What did that lead into in picking your intimate relationships? How did it influence it?
Well, I think that I picked somebody who was that kind of rescuer, that father figure, that person who could be my protector. And I had complete disconnection of myself. So it was like I needed somebody else to, well, I suppose be the parent. I was still Sharon, the wounded little child, although I was oblivious to that, my little wounded child was with me and she wasn't going to get any more wounded. So the best thing I could do was pick a relationship that made me feel safe.
Wow. We talked a little bit before about, was that true love or was that a trauma bond connection?
I would say more a trauma bond, definitely. And that element of codependency of this, I'm dependent on this person. I do honestly believe in all relationships, we come together at a certain point in our lives because we need something from that other person. We need something that we can't give ourselves, that we're completely unaware of. It's only when you realize you can give it to yourself, you then start to look at the foundation of that relationship. And especially if that other person isn't giving themselves what they need and they're expecting that of you, you could then hold resentment to them. There's so much going on.
So much going on, and it's all unconscious, so you don't know it.
No.
You know? So I have an infographic on my screen. You can't see it, and nor can the listeners, but I want to ask you, on the left-hand side, it's from Terry Cole, this amazing therapist. On the left-hand side, it's trauma bond, and on the right-hand side, it's true love. So I want to ask you these questions real quick.
Okay.
Did the relationship start with instant attraction and irresistible chemistry?
No.
No. Okay. All right. So the opposite of that was in true love on the other side is the relationship starts with attraction and curiosity that builds over time.
Oh gosh. You know, I don't think either of them.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
And I know why. It's because I spent so many years being numb. It's only really now I'm unnumbing. But for me, it was, it was more of a connection because somebody was funny. But yeah, go on, carry on.
Because someone was funny?
Yeah.
So interesting. All right, so the next bullet point under trauma bond is the connection is highly physical and sexual.
Yeah.
Okay, so we checked one there.
Yeah.
The opposite of that, true love, is the connection is physical, sexual, emotional, and intellectual.
No.
Yeah. So most relationships, how many relationships do we know where someone met at a bar and had too many drinks and then went home and boom, it just started and then it never ended. The next trauma bond, the third bullet point, the relationship cycles through extreme highs and lows.
It's funny because not really, but I think that was my doing of choosing safe that's calm.
Yeah.
You know, choosing something where it's not going to be disruptive.
So it was, you were codependent, like you said. So instead of getting low or high, you were just like, I'm numb. I'm not going to feel anything.
Yeah. Let's keep this mutual because mutual is safe.
Yeah. So the opposite of that for true love is the relationship is stable and predictable based on mutual trust. Did you have mutual trust?
No.
No. The next thing.
It wasn't stable emotionally, no.
Yeah. The next trauma bond is important conversations are avoided.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. You say, I don't want to talk about anything because if it's bad, oh my God, he might leave me. And then I don't have that father figure, whoever I need.
Yeah.
True love, important conversations are a priority.
Mm.
Important and tough, I would say, conversations, right?
Yeah.
The fifth trauma bond, the relationship feels like an addiction that you are powerless to quit.
I think more so now than late, than earlier on. Looking back, I can see that, but at the time I couldn't. But yes, yeah. I would say that.
And then the opposite of that for true love is the relationship feels like an honor, a privilege, and a choice.
Mm. Actually, I think I felt that at the time because I always had that belief that I was much more mature than what I was, but clearly not.
Yeah. So this is interesting. So you've got elements of kind of both sides, mostly trauma bond,
yeah,
a couple in true love. But I can tell you when I read this, it is like someone wrote a book about me. Up until I did the work and figured out my programming, oh my Lord, like I was trauma bond central. Every relationship I had up until the last 3 years was a trauma bond. Just if I didn't feel instant chemistry and instant attraction, then something was wrong. I ran from it.
Yeah.
Physical, sexual. No, we didn't talk about tough things because I was like hiding. I didn't want them to know my true self because I thought it was not worthy.
Yeah.
So in your experience, what are the most effective strategies for people to recognize and break free from these negative relationship patterns that they learn in childhood?
I think having the awareness first. So some of the strategies would be, I think first having the awareness. I stumbled across, you mentioned that book, The Myth of Normal. You know what it's like when you listen to a book? I listen to a lot on audio. So you listen to one book and then you're recommended similar books and it kind of leads you down this path. I think a lot of my inner work that I've done on myself has been through that of listening to professionals give you advice and try and act upon it. It's definitely having the courage to do that inner work, to take some responsibility and to know that you might actually be responsible for some things that are going on rather than continually blaming. That's probably the first thing to notice. If everybody else is to fault or everything else is going, the world isn't working right for you, there's something there.
So if someone called you today, here's this podcast and calls you and says, I'm going to work with you and they are in a terrible relationship. Can you walk them through kind of what exactly you would do to bring them awareness and have them change?
Yeah. Again, it would be bringing them to that awareness, but almost bringing and instilling that inner cheerleader, but allowing them to connect with themselves again. Because once they connect with themselves authentically, and there'd be a few challenges that I would use to do that. And it would be simple things like, I want you to go home tonight and write 100 things that you like about yourself. Because that's like, what? People couldn't tell me 10. And it's not about overloading that of I'm good at this. It's actually going, you know what? I like rice more than potatoes. Or, you know, when you're that sure that you know yourself more than anyone else, so you're connecting back, you're just connecting yourself back to your heart because you know what you need and want deep down. Everybody knows once they're connected. It's not about me telling that person what to do in terms of what they should do. It's about them finding themselves so they can make that decision consciously.
I was listening to a Jack Kornfield podcast this morning and he was like, you can't truly open your heart until you accept yourself.
That's so true.
If you can't open your heart, how can you connect with a human being, like have a real deep connection, right? It's impossible.
Yeah.
So tell us more. Someone comes to you, crappy relationship. You help them connect them to themselves. One of the things you do is have them write down 100 things. Tell us more. Like how do they get from, and whether it's a broken relationship or depression, anxiety, addiction, how do they go from the state that they don't want to the state that they do?
But it's bringing them to feelings. It's making what they're familiar with, the familiar feelings, thoughts, emotions, responses, making that unfamiliar. And whatever it is they want in their life, how they want to live, what they want to be, what they want to do, making that familiar. It's literally switching the two. And I suppose there's an element of being okay with the unknown, because I know sometimes that wobbles people. But being okay with the unknown and actually making sure that their familiar things, or what is unfamiliar to them, become familiar. And you're instilling that by repetition. Hypnosis is what I use, the rapid transformational therapy, where they're listening over and over again. So these words become instilled in them and they become like an inner cheerleader. So they can be guided by themselves. They don't need to keep looking for external validation or approval. They've got it within themselves.
And why hypnosis? Why do you use hypnosis? There's all kinds of tools. What do you think of, what do you like about hypnosis?
I just like the fact that you're exposed and you're in absolute connection with your true self. And I don't know about you, Brad, when you've done it, but you can tell when someone's not quite giving their true answer. You can sense it, can't you? And I'm just, maybe I'll rephrase this question or do it in a different way. But once you get that exposure of, oh my gosh, this is me. And again, bringing the acceptance to that, because like you say about depression, anxiety, it's that people are just, they kind of don't know them. They're so disconnected. That's where they're not congruent with their inner and outer self. And once you bring that back into alignment, so they're whole and they can complete themselves and they're not relying on anything external to make them whole, that's where the transformation and the healing begins.
That's it. You have everything you need to be happy inside you right now. You just don't realize it.
That's it.
For
everybody has that power. Everyone does.
Everybody. You have it right now. And for 47 years, I searched for happiness and worthiness outside myself. And thankfully, at age 47, I realized I would have searched my entire life, because it was here. It was right here all the time, right?
Yeah. And do you notice this when you go back to certain books? Because I read certain books and I just don't get them. And then I read them back and I almost laugh at myself going, I know why you didn't understand that.
Yeah, because you were blocked, right?
Yeah.
I think the beauty of hypnosis, and by the way, hypnosis was actually around before psychotherapy, before therapy, right?
Yeah.
It's been around for a long, long time, and it's helped millions and millions of people on so many levels, but it gets into your subconscious mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your subconscious mind is the source of all of your problems. And guess what? Your subconscious mind knows the source of your problems.
Yeah.
So when Sharon and I are working with clients and we go into hypnosis with a client, which is really just a deeply relaxed state. It's not like the chasing the chicken around on stage. All you're just deeply relaxed. And we basically just ask your subconscious mind, what's the source of whatever your problem is? Drinking too much, eating too much, crappy marriage. And almost every time, the brain will go back to scenes, and they're almost always in your childhood, of, oh my gosh, I drink a lot now because I'm trying to numb the pain of my father hitting me, or my father not showing up to football games, or my mom always demeaning me, whatever it is. Your subconscious brain knows right now why you're struggling. So then why doesn't it do anything about it?
Because it does what's familiar, doesn't it?
It does what's familiar, because familiar is keeping you alive, and that it's its only job is to keep you alive. It doesn't care if you're happy or sad.
Yeah.
So we've got so much therapy, unfortunately, focuses on the conscious mind and the symptoms. Oh, you got anxiety. Well, when do you get it? And what's preceded? And let's teach you some breathing exercises. It's like having a really bad toothache and just having the dentist tell you just to brush your tooth more. No, that won't work. You got to get to the source of why does your tooth hurt? So what we do, the subconscious mind goes to the source. It's a beautiful thing. I've studied a lot of different modalities. I've looked at plant-based healing. I've tried plant-based healing. I've looked at a lot and studied a lot. And man, hypnosis is pretty powerful for so many reasons.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I try and explain it to people of when you said I'm drinking, I'm doing this to numb the pain. You literally hear it with your mind. It's not like you hear it and know that with your ears. It's like if you was to visualize hearing somebody you love talk, you hear that in your mind, not your ears. It's the same thing when you ask yourself those deep questions in hypnosis, you literally hear yourself answer. And you can't lie from it. You can't run from it. It's just about vocalizing it. And that's when you have the awareness. That's when you just, it's like awakening, isn't it, to yourself?
It's incredible. The 3-hour session that I went through, it wasn't actually hypnosis, but it was similar. I came out of there just a completely different human being. And you probably see this with your clients when you ask them at the end of the hypnosis session, how do they feel? The one thing I hear more than anything is, oh my gosh, I feel lighter.
Lighter always. I thought you was going to say that. Same to me. I feel lighter.
Tell us why people say that. Why do they feel lighter?
It's literally like they've taken off that rucksack that they've been carrying around for 45 years that's full of heavy burdened stones that they don't need anymore. And I use that analogy of like holding a glass of water out in front of you. It won't hurt for a minute. But if you held that glass of water like that for 45 years, I can guarantee that that would really hurt your arm.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. All you got to do is put the glass down.
Yeah. Trevor Hall has a great song, Put Down What You're Carrying. I didn't even know I was carrying something, and nor did you, right?
No.
And nor do most of our clients.
Uh-huh.
But you're likely carrying some real heavy, heavy, heavy baggage. Because if you are in a bad relationship, if you're not in any relationship at all because you're scared, if you drink too much, eat too much, smoke too much weed, whatever it is, it's not your fault. It's just from these childhood programming that are driving that behavior.
Yeah.
And once you figure it out, oh my Lord, life becomes really good. So I know you've worked with a lot of clients, Sharon. Could you possibly share a story of a client that came to you in XYZ shape and wanted to get to ABC state and how their life changed?
Yeah. This is the one I shared just recently on my socials. And it was about a guy who had suffered with anxiety so frequently. And he would mainly have this anxiety for two reasons. Like if he got confused, it would trigger the anxiety. And likewise, if he was anxious, he would feel confused. You know, that kind of confusion state where you don't know what to do. It's like that freeze mode of your nervous system where you don't go into fight or flight. You just freeze. You don't know what to do. So his way of blocking that would be to use alcohol and drugs. And he did that for a long period of time until, you know, it got to the point where it's affecting his relationships, his career. He was at risk of losing his house. And he came to see me, and I was expecting actually it to be something quite traumatic from childhood, but it actually wasn't. It was more to do with the fact that his upbringing was, his parents were very loving, but they were the kind of people who were in social situations that could get out of hand. So often the father would have to deal with unpleasant things and it was physical fights and stuff like that. And although that was hidden from the child was reassured. So my client as a child was reassured that everything's okay. There's nothing to worry about. Daddy will handle this. This is fine. So he could sense, his nervous system could literally sense there was something going on that was unpleasant, but he was being reassured and saying it was fine. So he couldn't understand, he just developed this confusion from probably 5 or 6 years old. He carried it through his entire life. And when we interrupted that with the hypnosis to find out where that came from and reframe it for him, gave him that insight of, oh my gosh, I can make them connections now. I know why this happens. He has had no anxiety. He has been able to drink socially, so not to the state where he did before. So it's a social drink where he's in control of it. He's had absolutely no anxiety at all.
So,
and it was one of my favorite ones, that one.
Beautiful story. Who was the father fighting?
Just other people, like whether it, not necessarily gangs, it wasn't like that. It was just altercations with other people, adults.
So
other father, outside of the family.
Got it. So that tells a lot, right? If the father's getting in fights on a regular basis, what does that tell you about the father? Did the father drink?
The father did drink, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And our same mentor, Marissa Peer, says that she has never met an addict that thought that they were enough.
That's right.
And it's not the drinking that's the problem. The problem really is how that person feels about themselves.
Yeah.
So, and this proves it, right? So your client likely felt, if your client would take my self-love quiz, I bet you he would show lack of self-love, because when your father or your mother lacks self-love and they don't feel enough, how can they ever teach you how to feel enough, right?
Yeah. And you're right. And interesting off the back of that, that person realized that the relationship they were in wasn't the correct relationship and made a decision to end it because he had to be the true person. It was a hard thing to do, but the realization of I'm in a relationship that isn't right for me or them, and making a conscious decision to end it happily, mutually, without the stress, without the fight, without the court, it was a realization of this is for the best of both of us and for our child.
Amazing. How many clients have come to you with an issue, and then once that issue's solved, all of these other things in their life gets better?
Yeah, it's funny because it's like that, like you say, they kind of see it as a bit of a miracle. We know how good and how powerful it is, but we expect it, but they don't. They're so shocked by it and taken aback of how can this be? It's magic. but actually not making the connection until they've had the session of, oh, I get it now. And it just makes them more conscious, like you said, about that consciousness. The talking therapies in particularly, you could talk about them and talk about them. They won't ever change the subconscious programming. So once they've interrupted it, they go on to be who they're supposed to be and then share that as well, don't they? Do you find that?
Yeah, because most society doesn't know about these programs that we have in RTT. Most of them are like me. I went to therapy for 30 years, right? So in our mind, you go to therapy and you might make incremental improvements and it's going to take a long time. So I think our clients are shocked when in the course of 1, 2, 3 sessions, like their entire life changes. They're like, how is this possible? And then you've got the clients who are like, can this stay? Can this really stay? And we're like, yeah, if you just continue to believe in the truth that we unearth, it can stay. So again, if you're thinking, huh, I wonder if I have these childhood programming issues, just take the 12 question quiz. It only takes 3 minutes at bradchandler.com/quiz. And then you're going to know, and then you're going to have a sense of awareness. And then with that awareness, you can start doing the work. Call Sharon, call myself, go get help on your own. But know that if you're suffering today, there is a better way. Don't say you've tried everything, because if you're still suffering, I promise you, you haven't tried everything. There is a better way, and you deserve to live a deeply connected life with purpose, where you wake up each day and do the things that really, really make you happy and fulfilled. Sharon, how can people reach you if they want to reach out and find out more about you?
So my website is sharonmorrow.co.uk. There's all the information on there about what I do, where I've come from, my past, my history, but also now how I help people overcome trauma, childhood trauma, but also anxiety as well.
You know, I try not to use the word childhood trauma for the very reason that we talked about. No one thinks that they had childhood trauma, or very few. So I started saying childhood programming, because I don't want someone to tune out when they hear trauma. Because I think, would you have tuned out 5 years ago if someone said, hey, this show's on childhood trauma?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, trauma doesn't mean that you were locked in a cage.
That's right. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. It's that I think that was explained in that book you said, Myth of Normal, of the big T trauma and the little T trauma. They're still traumas, aren't they? Even if you don't get your needs met, that's still a trauma to a child.
Yeah.
But that word is scary. We associate it to be something horrible.
Yeah, your little sister comes home from the hospital from being born and you think your parents love her more than you. What is the story you create? I'm not lovable. And why am I not lovable? Because I'm not good enough. And now I got to go for the rest of my life and protect myself and be a people pleaser and be in a codependent relationship from this one little thing. And it's not your fault. It really hurt you as a child. Your brain did what it was supposed to and it protected you, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, that concludes another episode of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. If you've listened before, you know that I'm on a mission to help 1 million people find freedom and happiness. So I can't do it alone. I need your help. So if you enjoy this podcast, can you please do me a favor and share it, rate it, review it, anything you can to share this word, because we can together make this world a better place. Sharon, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And remember, love heals all.
Love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.